Hello, this is Chris Nelson for evolvedconsciousness.org. This is the second part of the causality presentation. The first one was on consciousness and causality. This one will deal with the unit of consciousness as a whole and how it works in causality with reality. The previous one on consciousness dealt with within consciousness. How does consciousness operate within itself and reality in terms of thought, emotion, and action, in terms of the trivium method of learning about reality and discerning truth? This one is more as a whole consciousness and how it affects reality and how we all affect in reality and affect each other. Basically, how cause and effect works in reality, and more of the general natural law, cause and effect. The actions and behaviors are part of natural moral law of cause and effect, but I'm still not getting into the specifics of how that moral law of behavior works. This is just more in terms of any effect that happens and how it affects us and how what affects us has us generate back into reality and how it's a recursive loop, a feedback system. So looking at image one, is causality, cause and effect, is a one-to-one, the prime ratio. It underlies how everything operates. There's a cause and there's an effect. If there's an effect, there was a cause. This has briefly been introduced in the previous presentation, I think on infographic 8 or 7. I think it was 7. Oh no, I think it was 8. Yeah. So we have cause to effect and effect to cause. It's reciprocal. It's a one-to-one. There's the one-to-one of for a cause, there's an effect, so there's a one-to-one ratio, but it's also one-to-one recursive, and it comes back, and causes generates effect, which generate more causes and effects in other places, and then that affects other places to generate more causes and more effects. So we have the free will agent as the green circle, representing the self, soul, consciousness, us, as a unit. And we are free will causal agent. Causal in blue and an agent in red. Agents act. So free will causal agent. We output and we affect reality. And then interaction and feedback in reality comes back and it affects us. So this is just another visual representation of how it works that I've been describing in the previous infographics. So on the bottom right, have a simplified explanation where you have a causal agent, which is the causal force of self. So the green circle as the whole self of the internal blue and the external red of who we are. Well, the green is the whole thing, the free will causal agent. So the causal force of self in green will output into reality, into the effect realm of reality in red. So the causal agent will affect reality. But within that force of self, we have the blue and the red. And the blue is thinking and emotion, and then in red, we have the act. So we can think of pushing a rock, and then we desire to push the rock, since we associate desire and care with the emotional aspect. And then we finally act to push the rock. And this is the causal force of self. And this goes out into reality, where the rock is pushed and moved, and the reality is affected and altered. So this is a basic representation of how we as causal forces of self, as a causal agent, causal of thinking and desiring or caring, and then the agent of acting. And then we output into reality, into the effect realm of reality. The second infographic here has how this works locally and in the aggregate. So people think, oh, well, it only comes back on you, and we're only responsible for ourselves, but that's not how it works in reality. We are in a closed system, and what happens in the system affects us all, even if we're unaware, even if it's not right now. It's down the line. It's a closed system on Earth. It interacts with other greater systems, such as the solar system and the galaxy, whatever. There's the sun coming in. Things come in and out. But it's a closed system of Earth. So things do affect everyone on the planet. So we have a localized reaping and sowing. So this is an elaboration on the previous one, the previous infographic, where I just had one causal force of self. So if we start at number one, that's causal agent one, and number two is causal agent two. So from number one, you go up in the blue arrow, you do something, your output, you're going to create an effect as a response. Now over the line, that's stepping into the other person's realm. So for them, that's a stimulus. Your response becomes a stimulus for the other person. And that's the red arrow going in. But the blue to the red is created by the first person. You generate a response, and that has an effect, and that goes in and affects other people as input. So what you create becomes a stimulus and an effect, an affection and input for someone else. That in turn generates their thoughts, their emotions, and their actions, their internal causal agent forces, where they generate causally from thoughts and emotions into the effects of action, and then they output, which is a response, a reaction, and an effect. So they generate in the blue arrow, well, that's representative of the causal force, and then the effect is in reality, and then it goes back to the first person, where it's a stimulus, input, and an effect again, and then that goes to thoughts and emotions, the causal force, internally in consciousness, to the effect of consciousness, of action. And then we respond in turn and react, and it goes round and round and round, and this is how it works in the whole planet, even the non-causal agents. There are forces at play, such as weather and things that are affected by environmental conditions of cause and effect, so not in a behavioral sphere, but just in the pure natural law, cause and effect, universal. It has nothing to do with human behavior. Although human behavior can create effects and changes in the environment that will then affect weather, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about how there's other forces that we can interact with, that can affect us, and we can affect them. So it's not just causal agents from 1 to 2 and 2 to 1, or 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 and 3 to 1. And it's a multiple pathways. There's multiple forces and agents of effect. Once you think about this globally, and 7 billion people in the whole planet and all the forces at work, it's a very, very, very complex system. So that was localized reaping and sowing, where you have one person to one person, where you can see the effects. But in the aggregate, reaping and sowing, we don't always see what is being done, what we are doing to others, and what we are doing to ourselves in the long run. How long has it taken for us to reach this point based on previous devolved consciousness, exploitation, and domination of the planet, and pollution, and alleged progress, to reach the point where we're realizing we're poisoning ourselves, cancer's high, autism, there's all these problems, because we poison our environment and think it won't affect us, because we're ignorant, degenerate, low base consciousness, cowardly retards. Oh yes, make no mistake, it is being retarded. It is being very slow on the uptake of the reciprocal feedback in reality. But it could also be generated that way, because there is the whole aspect of population reduction and controlling people. So how better to do that than have people kill themselves? by polluting themselves, by polluting their environment, make themselves sick, and then generate the whole healthcare system that seeks to treat symptoms and not deal with the root causal factors. We're going to keep polluting our environment, but we're not going to fix anything. So we're just going to keep getting sicker and sicker and sicker until we destroy ourselves or destroy the planet. You know, it's just a complete mass psychosis, idiocy, retarded, degenerate, stupidity. That's the human race. We're completely self-absorbed and conceited with ourselves and our pleasure trap attachment and the comfort we can derive from our standard of living. So whatever we can get from the planet and from others, or we just take it. So the aggregate reaping and sowing is everyone sowing, 7 billion people sowing on the planet, and we're all going to reap it together in the end. So there's individual localized reaping and sowing between individuals where you live in your geographic location, in your geographic zone of comfort. Then other people have a geographic zone of less comfort and more hell created by your exploitation and the globalization, the democratization, and the plan for a global empire that you support through your way of living in ignorance, not understanding evil and morality and authority and slavery. So we got aggregate. In the end, there's going to be an aggregate reaping and sowing because we're all in one system, planet Earth. So all these effects, the causes and the effects, the reciprocity, eventually we're always reaping it globally anyways in terms of weather patterns and other forces and geopolitics. There's causes and effects happening all over the place. But eventually, in terms of the planet, there can be a reaping, a global reaping, where other forces such as weather or earthquakes or whatever happens could happen, where, you know, we're all going to be affected and it's all going to be a shithole. If the water level rises, well, everyone on the planet is going to be affected by that. So it's not an individual sowing, so it's only the polluters of the planet, they're going to get the reaping. No, it doesn't work in some blind, impersonal karma force, idea, conception, speculation that comes from ritualized Eastern conceptions of why there's evil in the world and trying to make sense of things. And again, psychology and questions and answers and trying to find answers and inventing them and trying to make sense of things. So there's these false conceptions regarding karma, and it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work in the next life. There is no next life. That's all speculation. It's all invented imagination and fantasy to try to provide answers to those daunting, dark, discomfort, uncomfortable, insecure questions that have us in the fear of the unknown, and that is death. So you invent concepts like afterlife somewhere else and heaven somewhere else, and oh, you get to be rebirthed and reincarnated and recycled, yada yada yada. But the real karma is as I'm describing here, is things are going to happen globally. Why are they happening to us? Well, it's based on, quote, past lives. Yes, the past lives of people who have lived before us, who have been degenerate low consciousness just as we all are. But some of us are elevating ourselves, we're evolving consciousness, we're choosing to live by higher consciousness, a truer consciousness, a more evolved consciousness, and we're trying to get away from that degenerate low base consciousness that has created the situation we are in. So it's all the past lives, all our ancestors led to us being where we are. Everyone who did a murder to survive or did evil things, who knows what happened, all the good and evil led us to where we are now. And it can't be undone. Everything has been the way it is. And we can look back and see this didn't need to be done. But you can't change it now. We can only change it into the future. You can't change it in the past now. You can't retroactively go back and change things. You can only change into the future based on now and what we know about the past. So we can not be stupid idiots like our ancestors, and we can actually do things more properly. But the reason we're in the situation we're in is because of the coward ancestors and the cowardly ignorant ancestors and all the past lives before us. The past life and all that, it's right now. People living right now are part of our past life, and we're the past lives of the people who are going to be born in the future. If you want to look at it conceptually, of the All Source One, well, it creates everything in that, in this speculative conception. It creates everything, and then from what's created, there's emergent phenomenon from the complexity of arrangements and components, to which you eventually get biological life, and then you get organic life of animals that can express consciousness through thoughts, emotions, and actions. And each thing is each being, each animal is living and dying for thousands of years, and that's all past lives of that one source conception. So that's how we're all that one thing, and we're all reincarnating, and quote rebirthing, and quote recycling in that speculative conception. That's how it would be working. So we're all past lives, and the people being born, and well, they're the future lives, and that's how karma actually works, objectively in reality. No woo-woo, no magical force somewhere else out there. It's all us. So the reason we are reaping what we are reaping now in terms of health and the planet and the geopolitics is all because of people that exist now, and because of everyone that existed before us that led to us being in the situation we are right now. And unfortunately, you can't go to the other people that don't exist anymore and try to get them to change things, because they're responsible. Well, no, now it's in our hands, and we're the responsible party, and we are the ones that can fix our situation, and only us. We are now at the tip of the spear. Everyone else before is dead. There's still people living right now that have done things before that have led to the situation now, and they're responsible too. But they're probably set in their ways. They're not going to change. So it's up to us, who will change and create a new way of living, to do that and fix things. We didn't create the situation. We didn't put us in our position. But we find ourselves in this position, and we have no choice but to deal with it. So we have to fix things. We have to be the ones to sow differently in order to reap differently. We have to create causes that aren't the same causes as the degenerate low-base consciousnesses that have created the situation we are in. We need to evolve consciousness so that in that causal force, the primacy of consciousness and the power to change things in the primacy of existence, as a self, a unit, individual self, the primacy of consciousness and the causal force needs to change to evolve consciousness and higher living in order to sow into reality in better ways so that we can reap in better ways. It's all up to us. Then the next infographic, number 3, I have an elaboration on the whole prime ratio and how this is a foundation for reality. So we have cause and the why, and that's the foundation, the principle first, the quote, first cause. Conceptually, you know, you go far back, and as far back as you can go in the causal derivation, you get to that conceptual principle, first foundational cause, the prime mover, the unmovable mover, etc. So this is the cause, the why, and then you have the effect, which is the what. So we have causality and logic as two examples, and these are dual. There's a one-to-one. Causality is one-to-one, and logic is one-to-one. And one-to-one and one-to-one, well, that's 11. I'll get into that symbolism and that project, the third part of the project that I'm still working on, and living in the four elements and the 11 dimensions and duality and good and evil and bull symbolism and all that. Lots of work to do still, but just putting the 11 there just so you see that's what the 11 represents. Also, the justice card in the tarot is 11, and it's all about good and evil, justice, injustice, the duality, and that deals with causality. So causality is cause and effect, one to one. Logic, one to one. If you're looking in programming in computers, 0 and 1 is the base for programming. That is identity. It can't be both. The cause and effect, it's not both the cause and the effect. The cause isn't itself its own effect, and the effect isn't itself its own cause. And 0 is not a 1, and 1 is not a 0. So there's identity, and it can't be both. So this is at the foundation of cause and effect, the prime ratio of 1 to 1, is there's identity. And this is if-then in programming and logic. You have an if, and then you have a then. It's cause and effect. One thing follows from the other. So you have, on the right side, it's a one-to-one relationship, or a one-to-many relationship can be derived as well in terms of greater complexity and division or multiplication. So the first is one-to-one is the prime ratio, but then you have other ratios where you have one-to-many. So 1 to 1 equals 1, 1 over 1 equals 1, 1 to 2, 1 over 2, that equals a half, and a third, and then a quarter, and two-thirds, and three-quarters, and there's many, many ratios, an infinite amount of ratios. So the description I wrote was 1 to 1, the prime ratio, equals 1, the conceptual first cause prime mover, which represents the basic prime ratio and causal relationship that corresponds one thing to another. Specific coordination and arrangement, the how, of components, the what, for possible greater complexity. So it's the coordination and arrangement of components that lead to greater complexity. Once you have basic parts that build into larger complexity from coordination and arrangement of those basic components, those basic parts and particulars, you have a greater complexity. Then that greater complexity can also join with other greater complexities to form even higher greater complexities. This is how all of reality is created. From the quantum level to subatomic to atomic and other particles and molecules and everything else, it's all a building up. It's a coordination and arrangement of components. You can think of Legos, you can think of programming. It all works the same way. So from the base, the prime ratio, 1 to 1, 0 or 1 base duality, and if you're thinking of programming, comes more complexity, 1 to 2, etc. This is the multiplicity, diversity, and variability of creation from the division of one singularity into many. This relates the conception of God and the conception of the first cause and prime mover, and it relates it to programming and causality and logic. So this is an interesting and important thing to understand about causality and how it relates to origins conceptually that we can imagine about how everything began. Is when you have basic components in programming, the 0 and the 1, well, they are arranged 0010101, whatever that letter is or whatever symbol that is, but you have A like 0010 0001, I don't remember what it is, and then you have the capital A and the low A, but all it is 8 bits, 8 zeros and ones arranged and coordinated in a specific way, coordinated in a specific arrangement of those components. What components? The basic duality, the 1 to 1 of 0 and 1. In programming, this is how it works. So the what is the components, the 0 and the 1, and then the how is how do you arrange them, the coordination and arrangement. So 0010010. Well, that's one letter, and then you have 0010010. Well, that's something else. And it's all based on the coordination and arrangement of those components that produce something else. Then you have the letter A. So, you know, you'd have eight bits for the letter A and 8 bits for the letter B. So if you combine the letter A and combine the letter B, and then you can combine and create words, so that's greater complexity based on that original base of 0 and 1 that created the letter. Then the letters create words, the words create sentences, and on you go. This is how things work in programming. This is how conceptually we think of the prime mover, the first cause, and the division from 1 to 1, I guess as itself, and it's a cause and effect, and it creates an effect, and who knows how it works. I'm just explaining how causality works itself. And I'm trying to relate it to other conceptions we might have about other things and other answers we're trying to come to based on the prime ratio of 1-to-1 causality and logic and programming. Just this is how reality is constructed. It's everywhere. If you want more of an understanding on that, I guess you can look at the scale infographic I made from the universe to the energy field and in between, and how we go to greater complexity to the molecules and the cells and the DNA and the molecules and the DNA and the cells and all the different various levels of complexity to an animal, to a planet, to a solar system. It's all smaller parts into bigger parts. That's how all of reality works. To understand that in programming and Legos, logic and causality, it's helpful to understand how reality functions that way. And this doesn't require any speculation, any imagination, any invention of fantasy beliefs or anything like that. It's all just purely logical, and it can be seen in reality. If you understand programming, if you understand Legos, if you understand how to build greater complexity from the coordination of arrangement of smaller things, and those smaller things produce bigger things, and you can use those bigger things in other arrangements and coordinations to build even bigger things. That's just how the universe works. Next image is number 4. So here I'm doing the previous from infographic number 1 and 2, and I'm showing how it relates to the two different people again. So causal agent 1 and causal agent 2, just showing it in a different way. So you have the first one on top and the second one on the bottom, and the causal force of self from thoughts and emotions into action. Well, that generates into the effect realm of reality, and then that has an effect, an action and a reaction, causal feedback. So the arrow points down to the other person, and then they go through the same process, and the arrow comes back up, and then it affects the other person. Back and forth we go in a causal feedback, a reciprocity in reality, a recursive or a repetition, a loop. So we have our free will causal agent and the potential, and then we generate into the actual, and that actual affects other people, other free will causal agents, and then they have the potential to generate an actual in reality, and that affects us, and then we develop an action, and that's the whole causal feedback. This is how cause and effect works. So here I'm describing it again in terms of one free will causal agent to another. So reality affected and altered, one person affects another, they respond, react, reciprocate, etc. There are two causal factors, with the initial source essence being from within an agent. So here I have two causal factors. One is within an agent as thought and emotion, and then there's the agent themselves as a causal factor to influence the other person. The secondary causal factor is the effect generated by the first causal factor within an agent. So the first one is thought and emotion, that's the first causal factor. And then the secondary causal factor is the effect generated by the first causal factor within the agent. So within the agent, the first causal factor is thought and emotion, and then the second one is the action. So as a whole, the thought and emotion and action represents the secondary causal factor, which is the causal force of self itself, which acts as an influence in reality to influence other causal agents. And then they themselves, before they represent a causal force themselves in response, well, first they have to go through their own internal causal factors of thought and emotion, and then produce that action, and then as a whole, force of self, that's a causal force in reality that affects other people. So there's two causal aspects. There's the one from blue, and thought and emotion, to red, and then when we unify the thought, emotion, and action, well, then we get the green part of the causal force of self. So just to explain cause and effect, and how there's two of them. There's the one internally, and the one we generate ourselves, the effects we generate, are themselves a causal factor for other people as a stimulus. And if you look at the infographic number 2, that's why there was the blue arrow coming out from the green, because in the green circle of the self, you had thought and emotion and action, the triangle, the trinity of consciousness. That was the first cause within, and then you generate another cause without in terms of other people. It's a causal force for them to affect them. So, not sure if this is understandable to people, but you have to really think, contemplate, and reflect on cause and effect and how it actually works. Because when you generate into reality, yes, it's an effect, an action, an event that has an effect on other people. But that's the whole point. When there's an effect on someone else, that is a causal stimulus in order to get them to do something else. Because if there wasn't that causal effect that affected them, well, then they wouldn't even respond. So the response that they engage in, the second person, is completely dependent upon the stimulus and input they received. If that first causal force of self did not produce an effect in reality, then you would not be stimulated by it in order to produce your own effect in reality. So that's why there's the one from internal, and then there's the external one from free will causal agents themselves acting as causal forces for other people. So we have the internal causal force and the external causal force. So to continue reading at the bottom here, the effect will affect another causal agent that can generate another cause related to the first. The source of the first cause is internal that generates an action in the external. The next infographic, number 5. So here I have a triangle, but you can have a square, a pentagon, a hexagram, a septagon, hexagon, octagon, dodecagon, whatever you want. You could have a 7 billion faced geometrical figure to represent the 7 billion people on the planet. And this is how we all interact. We have our thoughts, emotions, and actions that go out into reality, and then the arrows are all interlinked. So you'd have 7 billion arrows going to the center point, and there's the reaction in reality. Reality is where all the interaction occurs. Again, primacy of existence. Without reality, without any stimulus, you wouldn't have any input, you wouldn't have a body, you wouldn't have anything, you wouldn't be here, there'd be nothing. On the right, another little demonstration of how it works visually. Just trying to describe it in different ways so people can understand. So you have your cause to effect, your thought and motion to action, and that's where you have a choice. As a self, you have a choice to do that. You output, and you have a choice to output. So you're outputting in reality. that produces an effect and has an affect to other causal agents, which themselves are in green and they are their own consciousness and self, and then they go through the same process of that stimulus affecting them, and then they go from cause and thought and emotion to the effect and action, and then they produce an effect, and it has an effect, an output in reality, and then that effect and affect will then influence us, and we don't have a choice because it's happening in reality. We can't just stick our head in the sand and pretend it's not happening. So when we output, we have a choice, and when we input, there is no choice. This is what I've been getting at as what I explained in previous infographics and first part. So image 6 is a remade version of aggregate sowing and reaping. We're all in this together. Our actions affect others and their actions affect us. As one suffers, we all suffer. As we and others sow, so shall we and others reap. So just as I've been describing in infographic number 2, aggregate reaping and sowing, well, this is how it works in a more visual sense. So as I said, this is other work I've done previously, last year. I'm just including it for reference, to put all my work together in order to have you understand how cause and effect, sowing and reaping works in reality. So it's just another visual representation. So in the individual, in the consciousness, as a causal agent, we are a sower. So the sowing is the cause and the reaping is the effect. But as a sower, we do the sowing. So that's why we're in green as a sower, as an individual consciousness. We're a causal, causes, thoughts and emotions, and the agent, the action. And we're sowing the causes and reaping the effects. So we have effects that are output, where reality is affected. And we have effects that are input, where reality is affecting us. And that's how, as an individual, we reap and we sow. But in the world, in existence, in collective co-creation, that is the reaper. The world is the reaper. That's what's doing the reaping on us. We all do it to ourselves, but it's coming from the realm of reality. As I showed in the previous infographic with the triangle, we're all inputting into reality, and the place where all those, the dual directional arrows, well, that's all in reality, and it's all feeding back and reciprocating and influencing stimulus and input and output. So this is how the world in existence is the reaper, because that's where the reaping is coming from that interaction in reality. Without that interaction, there wouldn't be any reaping. So these are the darker red circles going around and round and round. These are all the forces and stimulus and effects and events and phenomenon happening in the world that's going around and could affect something else somewhere down the line that you don't know, because it's not instant reciprocation. There's a delay because it goes around and round and round. And, you know, this is just one section, but it's more complex than this. There's the circles everywhere, which I'll show in an upcoming infographic in a different way. So we're reaping from reality. It's affecting us and input, and then we're generating causes, and then we're sowing into reality. And then it goes into another person. The same thing happens to them. And this is like 7 billion of these free will causal agents of natural moral law. And then there's other free will causal agents, other animals. And there's less interaction with them. And then there's impersonal forces that don't have thought, emotion, and action, and the forces of the weather and other forces and laws in the universe and existence. But this is how it comes in and it goes out. And then it goes round and round and round in the field or web or force of reality, of cause and effect. And then it comes back, and then input and output, and it just goes around and around. So the next image, infographic number 7, has the different way of looking at this, where so I've called it causal reciprocity of interaction in reality. So again, the importance of reality for the interaction. So we, again, this is a 3D view, where we have natural law, cause and effect, field, force, or web of behavior, actions, and deeds as an interaction with the forces, events, phenomena, etc. at play in the pattern or fabric of reality. So all the circles are going round and round and interacting with each other, and then eventually forces affect us, and then they come in, and then from that stimulus we have thoughts and emotions, and the causal force to generate an output as an action into the effects, as an effect, and then we output that effect into reality, and it becomes part of that field, force of web of natural law, cause and effect, just going out, and maybe we're polluting the environment, so then eventually there's going to be an environmental kickback, feedback, a reaping of how we're poisoning our environment, then it's going to affect us, we're going to develop diseases, etc. So this is another way to visualize how reality works in terms of input from reality and output into reality, and how it affects us and affects others. As I mentioned in infographic 6 from previous work, we're all in this together. Our actions affect others, and their actions affect us. As one suffers, we all suffer. As we and others sow, so shall we and others reap. Because we're all in this together, it's one system. Now again, I have some more work that I've done before. So that previous, the infographic 7 and the next one, 8, is based on other work that I've done on natural law causal agents. I just had it all together along with the infographic 9. These were all put into one infographic, and it was just too tight. There was, it was too much in one place. Everything was really small. The font was small. So I separated them. I put one in infographic 7, so in infographic 8 now, there's 3 parts in it, and the last part I put into infographic 9, so I just separated them to be more visually perceptible, not small font, so it'd be nice and bigger at least. So natural law causal agents, we have intelligence, care, courage, will of truth, morality and right, versus the ignorance, apathy, cowardice, laziness of truth, morality, and right. So either you're seeking to become intelligent, care, and have the courage and will to live in truth, morality, and right, or you're not. And you're in ignorance, apathy, cowardice, and laziness of truth, morality, and right. That's the true self, the truer self, the realer self, the authentic self, the self-examined self, versus the unexamined, inauthentic, false self, lower self, etc. That doesn't care about truth, morality, and right. So that's self-knowledge. Moral knowledge is self-knowledge. All of this is about ourselves, consciousness, and how to interact in reality, interact with each other. And this is the heart of man, the spirit of man, the quintessence, the soul of man. All this is representative of truth, morality, and right, and good, the so-called transcendental aspects of being. So we have care for truth, where we have the desire to seek truth, embrace truth, embody truth, and then share truth. And in the previous part 1 of causality and consciousness, I've explained this as well. In the infographic 14. So level 1, seek truth, and then you develop intelligence. And then level 2, you have embracing truth, which develops your intelligence. You seek truth, and your intelligence will develop when you embrace the truth. Then you'll have the truth. And this is all based on care as well. And you have to care enough to embody the truth, not only to accept it and embrace it as the truth, but then you need to embody it, become it, exemplify it, live it. You have to align harmonize and unite with it, and live it in your life. To be the truth, be moral, be right. You can't be the whole truth, you can't be all of morality, you can't be all of right. Those are absolutes that we can't reach in totality, but we can progressively become more of it as we evolve consciousness up the rung from the checkerboard floor of the animal, amoral, animalistic, low-base, carnal, fleshly consciousness. And we climb up the ladder, climb up the rungs, the levels, the degrees and grades, in order to rebirth ourselves, recycle ourselves, retransform ourselves into a more reawakened and truer, realer, higher states of being and consciousness and living. So after we embody the truth, then we have to have the courage and will to share the truth. So we're reaping from reality, and then we're going to sow back into reality. So this is the care to learn where we consume, and the care to teach where we generate. So at the bottom, we have the opposite, where it's ignorance and apathy for truth. This is just the cycle, the hamster wheel. I have an infographic on that as well, and you can go look at. So we just live, survive, procreate, enjoy life, and then we die. And that's what everyone keeps doing. Live, survive, procreate, enjoy life, and die. So you got to enjoy life. Got to have fun. Follow your bliss. Follow your adventure. Yada, yada, yada. If you want more on that aspect of the pleasure trap and enjoying life, I have the article on the pleasure trap, and I have two short posts on pleasure gratification life mottos. And all this bullshit of focusing on yourself and the selfishness and the comfort and the pleasure. And that's what everyone's in. No one's devoting their lives as much as they can to truth, morality, and right, to develop true intelligence, true care, true courage, and true will, in order to actualize, realize, and individuate ourselves as a truer self, a realer self, a more authentic self, a more examined self, a higher self, living in higher consciousness and truer consciousness. Why is all this truer? Well, it's because we're reaching more levels of truth, and we're aligning ourselves. We're seeking the truth, embracing the truth, embodying the truth in greater levels. And then we can share that truth with others for other people to do the same work on themselves. This is the whole point of the great work. This is the whole point of alchemy. This is the whole point of all ancient wisdom that's been encoded through exoteric stories and narratives, metaphors, similes, allegories, analogies, and symbolism about alleged heaven and hell, about alleged God and devil, about alleged afterlife and rebirth and reincarnation, and all these religions and all these rituals they developed for the attainment of the afterlife and the attainment of rebirth, or getting out of the cycle, ascending, going to the fifth dimension, reunifying with the source, and all these speculative conceptions to try to make sense of things and provide answers for things we don't have answers to, in order to give us some comfort, some security, alleviating the doubt, and removing the fear of the unknown, etc., etc., which I keep talking about. So, this is the hamster wheel. We live, you work to survive, you procreate so that the human species and an aspect of yourself can go on into the future, and then you focus on enjoying your life. That's what everyone does. They're not focusing on learning about truth and morality and right, evolving consciousness to true intelligence, true care, true courage, true will, as a truer self, more authentic self, more examined self, higher self, realer self. They're not doing that. Because once you manage to take care of your survival, and you have a 9-to-5 job, and you have your kids, you procreated, well then what's the rest of your life going towards? Enjoying life. Then you focus on your vacations, your weekends. You go out of country, you escape from your life, play golf, whatever, sports, you watch TV, you watch sports. It's all bullshit enjoyment. So yeah, if everything was fine, then we'd only have a bit of learning and a bit of maintenance of everything being fine, and we could go just enjoy life and do things. But we're not in that position. We have a lot of work to do. There's a lot of shit that needs to be corrected, but we're not doing it because everyone's still focused on, oh, well, everything's fine. I don't have to learn more. I don't have to seek truth and morality and what's right and good, because I'm already right and good. I'm already a moral being. I have an infographic on that, on the insulated bubble of reality, the bubble of denial. People say, well, I'm good. Why? Because I don't do immoral things. Well, why don't you do immoral things? Because I'm good. So no matter what you tell them about their actions, people will deny that they're doing immorality. They can't admit they're wrong. As far as they're concerned, they're right. They're doing good. If they were to admit that their action was wrong, that they would have to admit that they are wrong. If they have to admit that their actions are immoral, they have to admit that they are immoral. Because you are your actions. No matter what people try to say, you know, Melanie Joy and other people who pretend they understand some aspects of psychology, but not deeper aspects of truth in psychology. People want to say, oh, you're not your actions. This is a pure psychological manipulation. Pure and simple. You are your actions. Actions speak louder than words. Ye shall know them by their actions, the fruits of your actions. So your actions are important. And when you look at your actions as part of who you are, people don't want to face the reality of their actions because that's showing them the reality of who they're choosing to be right now. And if you want, you can stop engaging in immoral actions and you will stop being immoral in that specific capacity and you'll be more moral. People don't want to accept this. There's a lot of negative ego attachment to falsity going around that has you in a negative ego modality because you're attached to falsity and you're using that falsity as an aspect to form a basis of your ego personality identity construct. So until you let go of attachment to the falsity, you'll never be able to heal your ego personality identity construct from a negative false self to a truer self as a healed ego personality identity construct. So on the top right, just a more recreated version. So instead of intelligence, care, courage, and will for reaping and sowing, well, now it's ignorance, apathy, cowardice, and laziness coupled with the hamster wheel circle of life of live, survive, procreate, enjoy, and die. Because that's what most people are doing. The ignorance and apathy for truth is translated into the ignorance and apathy and the cowardice and laziness of truth, of living in it, of choosing not to live in it. This is where we live, survive, procreate, enjoy life, and then die. And then the people we've procreated, the new selves that are created, well, they just do the same thing. And on in each generation, and the past lives have been doing the same thing. And they create the condition we're in, and it keeps degenerating and degenerating because people live in the false appearances and mask of evil as good. So they think everything's good, but it's not. They think everything's moral, but it's not. They think everything's right, but it's not. Things are so messed up, but that's the problem with the appearances and the illusions, is we're not seeing the substance of reality. We're not piercing through the veil of those physical things and the comfort and the pleasure we have. The appearances of good through the comfort and the pleasure. We're not piercing through those false veils of reality in order to look at reality objectively and see, oh, well, those are just masks and veils and appearances over the substance of how corrupted and degenerate we are, of how we're in ignorance and apathy, cowardice and laziness of truth, morality, and right. So this is running the systemic loop. Programs of repetition going nowhere. We just keep doing the same things. We keep doing, and we also do new things of a more degenerate nature, and we do new things of a better nature, but we're still going downhill because it's still all under the appearances. So if you want more information on the substance versus appearance, I have an article on that, as well as an audio video presentation. It's on my site, Substance versus Appearance, and that explains this in more detail. We need to get past the false appearances of the false self and find the substance of who we are supposed to be, as the quote, quintessence, the soul of man, the heart of man, the spirit of man, etc. All that symbolism is all about truth, morality, and right being embodied in us in order to create a heaven on earth rather than the hell we are currently creating and have been creating for thousands of years. That's what all of the ancient symbolism, the wisdom, is about. The exoteric stories of religious natures and other interpretations of aliens and hidden tech and all this stuff you want to find in symbolism. Maybe it's true, but it's not what's most important. What's most important is here and now, and fixing the here and now, and creating a heaven on earth. And how do you do that is with this ancient knowledge that I'm explicitly describing, and other people do it too. No, I'm not the first. I'm just doing it in my own way, through how I understand these most central topics. You can go into the mysticism and the Rosicrucian and the Freemason and the Tarot and the Kabbalah and all these astrology, you know, and all that symbolism. But it can be confusing if you don't know how to understand it, because there's a lot of it that has pseudo-philosophies and pseudo-spiritual understandings. It's all mixed up, and the symbolism can be hard to decode. So you can go find it that way and find additional information. I've understood this as a reflection of reality and how things actually work. I don't need all the speculative mysticism and fantasy and all these concepts and ideas. They're fine to have beliefs. Go ahead, have beliefs. I have beliefs too, but I'm delineating my work from belief and actual, from truth that is verifiable in your own life. And the speculative, alleged truth of absolutes somewhere else in some other reality and some other foundational source, singularity, whatever, those are just beliefs. As much as they can be real and true, they're not necessary in order to create the heaven on earth and live properly. That's the whole point. You don't need all that stuff. So that's why I don't focus on that stuff, because as I mentioned in the part one on causality and consciousness, that's the problem with our imagination, is everyone wants new things. We want it externally, the new gadgets, the new things to titillate and sensationalize our reduced attention span and our need for stimulation. We're also stimulating ourselves with ideas and concepts and fantasy and beliefs and imagination into whatever fantasies, simply because we can, because we want the stimulus, we want new ideas. They don't have to be true, we just want the new ideas. Whatever's new, you know, we invent it ourselves or we get it from other people, and this is the dangerous path of just inventing whatever we want and believing it to be true. We don't need that to be provable as a truth. It's not needed. All you need to do is verify things in reality and how, and ourselves in reality, and we can understand that through words that reflect reality correctly and looking into etymology, and we can come to an understanding of how things work and how we reference reality through those symbols, and we can understand this important information as what is really important and not the other speculative stuff that doesn't really matter, because we haven't even dealt with the foundation of truth, morality, right, and good. People are stuck in other things and other levels of manifestation when we haven't even corrected the core root, corrupted, poisoned garbage that's at the root of the trees of how we generate in consciousness. We haven't even corrected that, and we're trying to produce fruits and leaves and branches that are all corrupted and rotting as false selves, and we're trying to new technology, new this, new that, and change this, and change government, and oh, if only we change the politicians, and oh, rearrange the furniture, and change all these things, and new technology, and new ideas, and Oh, imagination, imagination. Yes, imagination is good, but it has a dark side too. You get lost in all these speculations and all this bullshit and all this fantasy and all this wonderment and amazement and infatuation with the wonder and amazement. That's where you get all the New Age feel-good bullshit, because it's playing off of this wonder and amazement, these ideas and ideals. And people believe, oh, the quantum, the observer effect, and oh, consciousness creates reality. If we're not looking, it's not there. That's not what the experiment demonstrates. That's what you want to believe, because in your imagination, or someone else's imagination that fed you the idea, you wanted to believe it and you accepted it because it makes you feel good about your position in the universe, your self-image, your worldview, and everything's just so great now that you believe that fantasy. You feel so powerful. You create reality. Alright, so let's go to the next infographic, number 9. So again, I've said this is, if you've followed my work, you've seen this before. This is just the downward direction or the upward direction we're going in. Natural law, cause and effect, two parts to it. The left hand, Isfet, Eris, chaos, the control, confusion, cowardice, apathy, ignorance, and fear. Or the right hand of God, Ma'at, Isis, order, freedom, clarity, courage, care, truth, and love. We have an overall downward direction. We're all in this together, one spaceship, planet Earth. And when we have a critical mass harmonized with natural moral law, then we'll have the upward direction change. So again, we have the little the bubbles, the triangle of the self, and then we have the input and the output of effects in red, and then inside, internally of ourselves, we have the causal force in blue. So you have the ignorance, apathy, cowardice, and laziness of a darker green self, because that's a false self, and then you have the intelligence, care, courage, and will in harmonizing with natural moral law, and you're trying to output a blue arrow to try to change the direction towards the truth that is blue versus the falsity in red. And then you also have the people in the hamster wheel, they're just riding along the wave. They're just bouncing along, just riding the wave, enjoying the ride. They're not doing anything to change it. They're inputting the current status quo, which keeps the status quo, which is continuing perpetuation of falsity and evil and all those things. Then you have people on the bottom and knowledge. They have the knowledge, but they have dark care and they have dark will to actively create wrong. So the person in the hamster wheel is passively creating wrong or passively creating right. They're just going along to get along. But the person in dark care is actively creating evil. So they're actively creating a dark red arrow versus the ignorant hamster wheel riding along people. Well, they're just perpetuating the same condition that already exists. So they keep inputting red as well, the falsity, but they're not as dark. And then the people with intelligence care, well, they're inputting blue. They're trying to change it towards the truth and change the direction. So when we have a critical mass harmonized with natural moral law, then we'll be able to input, everyone will be inputting blue, and we're going to be able to climb. And there'll still be people who are just riding along in the wave, and they're going to input in a darker blue, not in the brighter blue and the higher light of truth. So they're still going to be, living more or less in truth, but not in the devotion and the knowledge of natural moral law and intelligence, care, courage, and will to sow properly, to create that upward direction. They're just going to be going along to get along. And so they're still going to be conforming to the status quo of everyone else doing what is right. So they're still going to be creating what is right, but not based on a position of intelligence, care, courage, or will. So if you want more information on the other presentation, you can go look at that. But I pretty much covered it in infographic 7, 8, 9. That has all the three aspects in it, pretty much. And the final one here, infographic 10. This deals again with causality and the aspect of loops and recursion. So here I've mentioned in the part 1 presentation on causality and consciousness, how it relates to the Ouroboros and infinity symbol. So we have causality as a cycle, as a loop, a feedback system, and recursion. This is all the symbolism that relates to that. So in programming, you have recursive loops, iterations, where you have I equals I plus 1. So you're, instead of having I equals something else, you're going to have I equals itself and plus 1. So the function calls itself I equals I plus 1. So then if I starts as 0, 0 plus 1 is 1. So then I becomes 1. So the next iteration in the loop and the cycle, I equals I plus 1 is I equals 1 plus 1, which is 2. So I becomes 2. And then in the third iteration, I equals 2 plus 1, which is 3. So then I equals 3. So it keeps calling itself. It's a recursive loop in programming. And in reality, this is what we do with time cycles as well. It's an effective way of not having to invent new meanings and new symbols for everything as a new thing. You can keep reusing things, and there's cycles and loops and feedbacks in reality. So the output feeds the input, and this is in the Ouroboros symbol and the infinity symbol. You have a cause that generates an effect, and then that effect inputs into the cause. So if you look at the Ouroboros snake with the tail into the mouth, well, the mouth would be the whatever side you want. I'm just going to use it on one side, and the tail of the effect going back into the mouth to generate the body of the effect, and the tail goes back in the mouth, and or you can look at it the other way, whatever. It's just it's the symbol for the output feeds the input, which creates more output, feeds more input, and on it goes, just like the circle of life, wheel of life symbolism that I've been describing. And the same thing with the infinity symbol. You have a cause, which generates an effect, and then the midpoint is the separation between the two. Or you could have the cause in one side completely, and to the midpoint, to the effect on the other loop, back to the midpoint, and then that's the cause in the other loop, and then back to the effect again, back to the cause, and one side to the other, one side to the other. But also in terms of the multiple aspects of cause and effect, you have a cause to an effect, which is then a cause for another cause to generate another effect, and that effect is a cause for another cause to generate an effect, and on it goes. So output feeds back as input to be processed again as output for more input. The generator feeds generation, and then the generated feeds the generator to feed more generation. And that's where we consume from reality, and then we generate into reality, as described in the previous presentation. So the cause produces an effect, which generates an effect. That effect is a cause from that effect is a cause because it's an effect from an effect. So that cause will then lead to another cause to generate another effect that generates another effect, which itself is another cause as an effect from an effect, which will generate, which will have another causal force generate an effect, which is an effect, and on and on and on it goes. So the causal force is an effect that potentially affects another as input stimulus, as a causal force to then generate another causal force as a response. We have cycle, loops, iterations that allow smaller and easier representation than new representations each time. And the example is all time references from the second to the year is a loop, cycle, etc., inventing a new name for each day or each second being of different length is not useful. So you're going to make seconds the same length, and then you can just repeat them. You're going to make hours the same length, and you can just repeat them. Days are the same length, and you can just repeat them. Math and numbers are part of the base programming of nature. Abstract numbers are infinitely precise. with infinite information. The examples are pi and phi. These are infinite information and infinitely precise. They just keep going and going and going into more and more and more precision and more precision and more precision into infinity. Physical measurements are finite, though. You reach a limitation in the physical measurement. It's not infinite in complexity, in precision like phi and pi is. As goes, the deeper you go, the more precise and precise and precise, but it goes on forever. In physical measurements, things are finite. They don't go on forever. So a computer program, reality, and nature have limited precision of numbers for measurement. The ideal infinite numbers can only be measured to a limited degree of precision. You can't go on forever and ever in pi and phi. Eventually you have to stop, because or else you'll be doing it forever and ever and ever. So free will is not required to develop growth and symmetry. The phi ratio, pi, etc. It is biological programming. Free will expresses thought, emotion, and action through the beings capable of doing so at varying degrees, as animals are. So in the previous causality and consciousness presentation, as part one to this one here, I had mentioned the aspect of nurture and nature, and how free will with consciousness and care can have valuations, cares and desires, and valiance, valence and salience, and judge values of things. Nature does not have that capacity. Nature does not have care. Nature does not have desire. Nature does not have nurture. It comes from free will causal agents. And you can relate that to here. In terms of the finite and the infinite, where the reality itself is finite, and then you have math and numbers that are infinite, and you have consciousness as well that's infinite in the possibilities, and we choose one. So we, from the infinite, causal consciousness, quote, spirit, internal, unseen, etc., we have the infinite possibilities, and then we collapse that into one possibility. And I have an infographic on that in the next part, part three or whatever that I did on truth, which will be upcoming. So from the infinite, we collapse it and we produce one choice out of many. And that's the reality we create, and it's finite and measurable, that choice in action. It comes from the internal subjective multiverse of infinite possibilities, and we choose one and we act on it. And also in terms of phi and pi and nature, and you think, oh, well, nature's infinite. Nature's got nurture. Oh, yeah, well, look at phi and pi. You're saying that's infinite information. Well, that's in nature. No, it's not in nature. The aspects of that representation of pi and phi is represented in the limitation of nature. So it goes around, maybe there's two or three iterations of the phi loop. And pi is only represented through the symbol of the circle. But you can't measure pi in that circle. It's a limited, finite. You can't measure pi to a precision, because pi is infinite. It's only represented in the finite. Same with phi. You know, you have the sunflower seeds, spirals going out, but it's not even a full Fibonacci, it's only a partial one. So there are representations in nature and the development of growth and symmetry, but this is all a biological programming. It's not actual infinity. It doesn't go on for infinite. You look at the phi representation and it only goes a few iterations. And the circle itself is finite. But a value in mathematical determination of how the circle is constructed has this value called pi, 3.14159, etc. And that goes on into infinity. So you don't require free will in order for phi or pi to be represented in physical nature. So, it might be confusing. This is where you have to contextually apply the symbolism, because the infinite information in Pi and Phi, and that's the abstract and numbers, and then the physical is finite. Well, then how can the physical of nature have the Phi and the Pi? Well, it doesn't have it to the infinite decimal points. It has it to a limited nature. The circle is a limit. The sunflower seed or the broccoli Phi representation, that's a limit of only certain iterations. It doesn't go on forever and ever and ever. Neither does the circle go on forever and ever. But in its representation, it has metaphysical aspects of the infinite that you can see by piercing the veil of reality and looking into the abstraction of numbers and seeing, oh, well, there's Phi. Oh, well, look at the circle. That has Pi in it. But it's not Pi itself, and it's not Phi itself. It's representations in reality. That's just a side note on that. Just wanted to interject that. Maybe it made things more confusing. Oh, well. So that's that second part. I guess the next part will be on truth. Representing the work I've done on truth and the frequency of truth and consciousness and understanding reality and the dualistic conceptual framework. I have an additional infographic on that, and then more on truth and the path of truth and speaking truth. So that'll be in the next presentation. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time and attention. Have a nice day. Take care. Peace.